Good Tuesday. Today is March the 18th, and you're listening to My Farm. Well, I recently caught up with Jim Sutter. He is the executive director of the U.S. Soybean Export Council. I had the opportunity to visit with Jim at Commodity Classic a few weeks ago, and we talked about all things soybeans as it pertained to exports reaching our global markets in different ways. We'll have all the details after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
I'm joined today by Jim Sutter. He is the CEO of the Soybean Export Council. Jim, exports, a huge part of the value that comes back to U.S. soybean farmers, and a lot of work you do in different fronts, in particular with the Ohio AgNet. We cover a lot of Ohio agriculture and a little bit diverse in where those beans go, but talk about the work and the importance of trade and what's been going on lately.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about this, Dusty, because I love to do that. And it's so important. You know, almost 60% of the U.S. soybean crop gets exported as beans, meal, or oil, kind of the basic soy products. So international marketing is really important for soybean farmers. So Ohio in particular is kind of unique. And they grow both commodity soybeans and also specialty soybeans. And one of the things that I like to say when I'm talking to audiences around the world about the U.S. soy industry is that we are a great supplier of choice. And by that I mean we've got farmers that will grow tight IP specialty crops as well as commodity soybeans. Well, I also have exporters that will handle those and export them to markets all around the world. So I really like to make the point that we are a great supplier of choice, which kind of differentiates us versus some of the other origins that are big soybean exporters, because not every origin has the setup to be able to do that. I guess one of the other things I would say, and I think some farmers in Ohio are growing these high oleic soybeans. And those are something that, you know, it's kind of very typical of a new product that's getting started. One year you grow a little more than the market needs, and then the demand, there's not enough demand to take it off, and then the next year it's vice versa. So I would just say to farmers that have done that and maybe had less than an ideal experience, hang in there. We're seeing good demand for both the meal and the oil from high oleic soybeans in markets around the world, and I know they are here in the U.S. too. And so be a little patient, but continue trying to grow this thing, because I think it's going to be a good crop. It's going to be a way to help diversify markets and diversify the way we market U.S. soy. And that's another thing that's very high on our priority list, is to be able to diversify markets. Now, I got to mention China, because any talk about soybeans and needs to include China. China's the biggest buyer of soy in the world, takes 60% of all the soy that is traded internationally. 60% is an important number when we talk about soybeans. But from the U.S., used to be almost 60%. Mm-hmm. Now we're down to about 40% of our soy is going to China. So we're happy to be diversifying, but we are also cognizant that they are a huge market and they would be about impossible to replace. So we've been there for over 40 years. 1982, the U.S. soy industry started, farmers and others started doing work in China. So we continue to treat them as very important customers, but we are trying to diversify in markets all around the world. We touch about 85 markets with the work that we do on an annual basis.
Very interesting. Well, obviously, geopolitical environments constantly changing, very dynamic. Outside of that aspect, though, what are some of the other challenges the American soybean farmer faces when it comes to exports and trade?
I would say the kind of, those are great question, because we hear a lot about tariffs and those kind of things, and we try to say, you know, we don't really know about those. We can't really do much about that. But the other big thing we hear about is, well, what about Brazil? So I'm kind of the other elephant in the room. What about Brazil? So as we're doing our marketing, we're trying to focus on differentiating U.S. soy versus the soy grown in a tropical area like Brazil, because there is a significant difference in the quality attributes of the soybeans. And, you know, for years, people just bought soybeans thinking soybeans are soybeans, you know, if you're an international buyer. But as people become more used to using NIR machines and more technology that can provide them with data, we're trying to help get experts involved to help people understand how to use that data and really understand the value of one origin soy versus another origin. So that's, I think U.S. soy farmers should know that we're working hard to make sure that the value of the U.S. crop gets properly recognized by buyers around the world. And that's not something that they've always done, because it's been more of a, you know, soybeans a soybean. But it is not at all the case. Soybeans are not just soybeans. Ours are different than other soybeans.
And this may be a spinoff of that question, but as you've been involved with this industry for a number of years and seen a lot of things going on, as you look ahead the next 5 to 7 years, 10 years is a ways out, but 5 to 7 is realistic, what's maybe one of the opportunities that you think could be most exciting on the horizon?
Oh, that's really a good question. You know, we continue to hear from people around the world the idea of sustainability. And people say, well, what do you mean by sustainability? I take it to mean people around the world want to know how their food's being produced. Where is it coming from, and is the food I'm buying in a grocery store in Europe or in Japan or somewhere else, is it damaging the environment? And will it limit the supply of food my kids have? I think it's going to be continue to be very important that we properly market the sustainability, the great conservation practices that our U.S. soybean farmers use as they grow soy, so that that also gets proper valued as people are making buying decisions around the world. So we've been doing that, but I think in over the next coming 5 years, it's going to be even more important.
Great information. Again, my guest today is Jim Sutter. He is CEO of USEC. Jim, a lot of moving parts. Thanks for all your work and for the update today.
Thank you very much, Dusty.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Fertilizer prices making agricultural headlines once again as retail fertilizer prices continued to rise according to sellers that were tracked by DTN during that first week of March. Once again, all 8 fertilizers were higher compared to where they were a month ago. One fertilizer was considerably higher, that being UAN-28 that was up 7% compared to last month. That an average price of $354 per ton. Now the remaining 7 fertilizers were slightly more expensive looking back 30 days. DAP had an average price of $765 a ton, while MAP was at $810 a ton. Potash came in at $447 per ton, while urea was at $548 a ton. 10-34-0 was $646 a ton. Anhydrous ammonia was $751 a ton. And UAN-32 came in at $397 per ton. Now, if you break that down on a price per pound unit nitrogen basis, the average urea price was 60 cents a pound unit nitrogen. Anhydrous ammonia was at 46 cents a pound. UAN-28 was 63 cents a pound, and UAN-32 was 62 cents per pound. Now, if we take a look back to a year ago, 4 fertilizers are higher in price compared to where they were a year earlier. Both DAP and UAN-32 are up 1%. UAN-28 is 3% more expensive than last year, and 10-34-0 is 4% more expensive looking back a calendar year. The remaining 4 fertilizer prices, however, are lower. MAP is 1% less expensive. Urea is 3% lower, while anhydrous is 5% lower, and potash is 12% less expensive compared to last year at this time. In other fertilizer news, Canadian potash fertilizer tariffs are set at 10% after originally being 25%, according to a DTN article from last week. The new tariffs are going into effect on April the 2nd. President Donald Trump said he would allow products that are traded under the rules of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, otherwise known as USMCA. That's the trade pact he signed in his first term. But Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins pointed out that he reduced the tariff on potash that was not covered under USMCA. President Trump's announcement, which includes a reduction of tariffs on potash not already covered under USMCA from 25% to 10%, is a critical step in helping farmers manage and secure key input costs at the height of planting season while reinforcing long-term agricultural trade relations, Rollins said. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great day.